Good morning. It's time for the Clay County Corner, coming to you live from the historic Clay County Courthouse in Salina, Tennessee. For the next hour, the Clay County Corner will inform you of what's happening in our community. Sit back and enjoy the program.
Once again, I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome everyone in here to the Clay County Corner, coming to you live and in living color on your radio dial right here at the old historic Clay County Courthouse. We're sitting here. We've got the fireplace going this morning. It's not real cozy in here, but it's nicer than it is outside, and it's a little bit of a dreary morning, but hopefully we'll bring a little sunshine into you, your room, wherever you've got your radio receptacle placed this morning. And it's a pleasure to be back again today. I'd like to thank Mr. Kevin Donaldson for subbing for me last week while I slipped off for a little while. But it's great to be back, and got a great show lined up today. I've got a couple of good guests this morning. Mr. Phil Ross, who's going to come in and talk to folks about some of the things going on up at the Cumberland River Hospital in the therapy area up there. And also a little bit later, Matthew Craighead's coming in. We're going to talk a little bit about farming. The association had their meeting the other night and gave away Farmers of the Year in all different categories. We're going to talk about that a little bit, and plus anything else that we may wander off on, as we occasionally do here sometimes. And we've got, of course, got our news of our historical happenings of the day. We'll go through those here in a minute. Got a basketball game down at the high school tomorrow night, playing, I believe, Monterey. And if I think I'm correct, then we've got eighth grade night, maybe out at the junior high, finish up their home season maybe tonight out there. So got a few things going on here in the county. And we've, of course, just came off of Christmas break. I guess today might be the first day back in school today down here. So be careful if you're out on the highways. Be looking out for the big yellow buses. They're not real hard to see. And remember, now you're supposed to stop. Don't keep going. And we've got, like I said, a great show today. I was trying to think maybe that I missed anything to kind of do a little intro here, but I think that's got us introed a little bit. And I guess we'll do a little normal thing here and thank everyone for making this show possible, the Clay Chamber, the three-star committee, and, of course, all of the folks that are responsible for this show by their sponsorship. We'd like to thank all of them and remind everyone that we will be giving away a birthday cake today and compliments of WVFB FM 101.5 Kicks Country, which is where we're coming to you over the airways. And with that, we'll take a little short break, come back. We might do a little bit of a few things that happened in history today. I don't know whether Phil's a history buff or not, but as an old teacher, there's a couple of things that kind of caught my eye this morning when I looked through the list, and we'll go through those and come back, and then we'll let him talk about what's going on up at Cumberland River Hospital. With that, let's take a little short break, and we'll be right back.
As we grow older, aging can present emotional and behavioral problems that often go undetected or ignored. But this is not a part of the normal aging process. Senior Care Unit, located at Cumberland River Hospital in Salina, Tennessee, is devoted to helping older adults and their families deal with these changes. The Senior Care Unit provides a comprehensive approach with a highly skilled staff to pave the way for coping with these difficulties. Referrals to Senior Care can come from anyone at any time. Don't suffer alone. Senior Care is there to help your family when you need them most. For more information or to make a referral, please call 1-800-777-8553 or 931-243-5265.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care. Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
Welcome back, everyone. I think before I let my first guest start, I'm looking through the events that happened today in history. I ran across their folder. I thought that kind of caught my eye. Things I guess that we all used to learn in history back in the days when we had lots of history classes in school and didn't spend the whole day studying for the exams that we have to pass now. Mm-hmm. But this is the day in 1431 that Joan of Arc was handed over to Bishop Pierre Cauchon in France and was eventually burned at the stake as a heretic witch because she had the nerve to put on a suit of armor and go out and fight for freedom for France. Hmm. And the Roman Catholic Church decided that women weren't supposed to do that in that day. So she was a heretic and a witch.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in 1496, Leonardo da Vinci unsuccessfully tested a flying machine. He wasn't successful on this day, but he tried to fly and didn't make it. It's kind of neat. We put him one of his failures on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1521, Martin Luther was excommunicated by Pope Leo X from the Roman Catholic Church, which kind of marked the beginning of the Reformation of the Church and folks breaking away and going to a much, much simpler, less ceremonious religion than the Catholic Church was practicing. And then in 1872, the first patent list was issued by the U.S. Patent Office. And I think Thomas Jefferson, one of his predictions that didn't come true, said that we would only need this list for just a few years, that everything just about that was going to be invented had been invented along about 1874 or 75. So I think he kind of missed that just a little bit.
He did.
We've had a couple inventions since then. I wonder how many patents we do have issued in this. There's no telling.
Okay.
I'm sure they've got a number somewhere. We might ought to look that up sometime just to be sure how far off he was. In 1938, the March of Dimes was established to fight polio. And I know, of course, the March of Dimes is still in existence today. They still mail out the letters with the dime in there for you to match their dime and that type of thing. But in 1838, polio was a drastic, deadly, crippling disease that attacked a virus that attacked attacked the entire world. And I guess Dr. Jonas Salk came up finally with what's the correct word there?
A vaccine.
With all the flu vaccine, that should hit me just like that. But I can remember as a student in the early 50s, we all lined up out at the grade schools, high schools, all over the United States. We all lined up and pulled our shirt sleeves up, and we all got a shot. Everyone in school got a vaccine shot. And I don't think that Dr. Jonas Salk made any money off of this. This was all basically passed out as free medicine to all the students at that time. So, you know, we weren't during the day of big medicine companies mm-hmm. trying to make big money.
No.
This was people actually going out and doing research and finding out things and then making it available to the public. And I think we've had a few cases of polio maybe this year here in Tennessee, but it's a very, very odd happening anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, growing up, I can remember pictures of young folks my age being placed in what they called an iron lung, where they would go into a cylinder type thing, and it would artificially keep them basically alive, breathing. And that when you got to a certain point that was the last step, was the iron lung. Okay, in 1952, Dragnet premiered on NBC TV.
Cop show, is that what that was?
Yeah, that was the cop, Jack Webb. That had the famous line in there where Jack Webb, he would be interviewing someone, a lady or something, about some type of crime, and He's the guy that came along and said, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. So that you still hear some of the comedians every once in a while going back and doing a little bit of that. I know Jack Webb and Johnny Carson had numerous things on the old Tonight Show based around Dragnet. And this I thought this one's kind of neat here. In 1958, Sir Edmund Hillary reached the North Pole overland. And I think that was with a great big group of people. And I believe about 2 days ago, a man named Colin O'Brady actually trekked across there in 54 days by himself. So I think I saw that, and I looked that up and meant to go through. And this guy has, by himself, I think he's climbed to the top of Everest, went across deserts, just all kinds of things. But it took him 54 days by himself to make the trek across Antarctica there. And then in 1977, Apple Computer it was incorporated. And let's see, I believe also on this day, here's a good few Kentuckians.
Okay.
This is the day that Mitch McConnell was first sworn in as senator from Kentucky.
Really?
In 1895. I say things like that sometimes. 1985. And of course, he's still around. I believe he's Speaker of the Senate now after all these years. And
he is.
Made it through another election. He's going to be there another few years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but Mitch McConnell, see, that's 15 and 18, about 30-something.
He's been there a long time. He graduated from the University of Louisville, I think.
And let's see, in 1987, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inducted the first female artist, Aretha Franklin. And this, of course, Aretha Franklin just recently passed away, but she was the first female inductee into the Rock and Roll. And this is a good one here also on this day. The first flip telephone went on sale today.
Really?
In 1996, it was the Motorola Star TAC. And it eventually sold $60 million. So in 1996, the first flip phone.
Sometimes I wish I still had that flip phone.
Well, a whole lot of people still have them.
Mm-hmm.
So
thank goodness they still make them.
So that's what happened on this day in history.
Mm.
Quite a bit of interesting stuff. I'll tell you what, before I have to let you start and have to interrupt you, let's take another little short break and come back.
Great.
We'll
okay.
be back just in a minute.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
Welcome back, everyone. Now we get into the serious part of the show now. Phil Ross is here with us this morning, and he is with the Cumberland River Hospital, and they have got some exciting stuff going on up there, which I'm not sure if he's in charge of it, but he's right in the middle of it. So, Phil, what's going on up there?
Well, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, Mr. Watson, for letting me come down and speak here this morning. I do listen to your show every morning. We've got actually the radio show on there, and I enjoy it and listen to the Salina, the news, and what's going on in Clay County and Monroe County, so it's always enjoyable. So what we've got going on, I have moved down here or come to work here at the Cumberland River Hospital in September. So I just wanted to let everyone know that I have started working here in this community and been here since September, and have been a therapist, physical therapist, for about 21 years. And just looking so forward to working with the people here in this community.
Well, did you work in Monroe County before that, or have you worked in various places over the years?
Mainly in the beginning there in Monroe County at the hospital for about 8 years, and then I had my own private practice there in Tompkinsville for 5 years. And since then, I've just home health facilities and then nursing homes until this job come available a few months ago. And Melissa, my wife, she's a nurse practitioner. She's always talked about complimented good people of Clay County. So She's been here for about 8 years, so I said, well, I might as well come right on down and be part of it.
So I believe you said you married her out of Clay County, but didn't take her too far from home.
Not too far. 30-minute drive, that's about as long as we can go.
Okay.
So, yeah, but what I wanted to just kind of talk about was we've got an open house. We've done some remodeling up at the therapy department at the hospital, and we've, you know, kind of brightened things up and put some paint on the wall and made some changes and some trim, and we're having an open house to meet the staff, and I think administration is going to be there. And that's January the 23rd. That is several weeks away. But just thought we'd kind of put that out. Maybe everyone can kind of put that on their calendar. January the 23rd, that's on a Wednesday from 2 to 4. Please come up, and if you have any questions, concerns about therapy, come. If you've been a prior patient or are interested in therapy, come up, and we would be more than happy to talk with you.
Okay, now the services that are, of course, the services that you do now and maybe the improvement of some of those things, if you want to go in a little detail about that.
Sure. Of course, there's several things that we offer. Kind of what I was talking about mainly today was our outpatient services for physical therapy. If someone is having any back pain, neck pain, joint pain of any kind, and you're talking with your doctor or have had recent surgery, orthopedic surgery, I know as we get older, our joints tend to wear out some, and you may end up having knee replacements, hip replacements, or if we can avoid falls. If you're having weakness, difficulty walking, having trouble getting up and down your steps at home, you know, that's what we can do for you. We can do our best to try to make you get around your home safely, to get back to your normal activities. That's kind of what physical therapy is all about, and that's what I want to let you know. You've got a local place right here in this community that can take care of you.
Okay, and I see you've got a whole bunch of notes over there. Do you want to peruse those?
I always try to be prepared. You know, I just wanted to, you know, we are located at the hospital, and we're in the bottom floor there, and what I like about this facility there, it's got its own entrance into the department, so you don't actually have to come in through the main hospital. So you come in through a separate entrance, and it's labeled physical therapy. We've got our own little parking spots there. Pull right up there, come right in, and Missy, our office manager, is there to greet you and to get you started, and we can go from there. And the good thing about our place what I've tried to do is we will be seeing all our patients one-on-one. You will not be in a group of patients there, three or four at one time. You get our undivided attention that when you're there, and that's to get you better and to get you on your way and to make sure that you feel like you've had a good service while you're there.
Okay, just exactly which section are you in up there then?
From what I would say, what I tell people is when you're coming into the or driving up to the hospital, you turn right there and come up the hill, the very first entrance, and it's up there at the helipad. If we know where that's at, and there's a door there, double glass door there on the left, and you can park right there in the front, and that's where the department's located.
Okay, and it's all completely remodeled and
yes. It had some wallpapers, kind of a dark type of scene. We wanted to try to brighten it all up and just kind of give it a, when people walk in that's been there, wow, this does look better. So I hope it does. I had Misty to get the colors. I didn't pick them out or anything like that. I let her take care of that.
Okay, and equipment there.
Equipment? Well, we've got some equipment there. We've got a treadmill and exercise bikes and that sort of thing. And that's important. But the key thing is what I have noticed over the years that a lot of therapists will just put patients on equipment and they just kind of step away and walk away. And you know, you can have equipment like that at home, but what I'm there is I may start you off warming up on equipment, But you are with me, and you get manual therapy, you get hands-on therapy of what you need. So that's a little different. But yeah, we do have equipment, but I don't rely a lot on equipment.
You know, I mean, you're not an exercise gym.
No, we are not, for sure. So don't think that you're coming up there just to get on. Some people will think, well, you don't have a lot of equipment like the place over in Cookeville or over in Livingston. But listen, what you need is a therapist that has the skills, that the experience, and to get you through what you need to, and a good home exercise program.
Okay, if I came in and said, I have my knee is bothering me, can you help me maybe do a little pre-exam type thing, and maybe we can walk through something and kind of find out what's bothering me?
Yes. I mean, we're allowed to do kind of a quick evaluation just to look what things are over and stuff. But if you, to give you maybe some suggestions on what you might do, but to begin therapy, and unfortunately with how insurance companies are, you have to have some sort of a physician order or an order from a nurse practitioner or a specialist. So, if I can say, hey, this doesn't look too bad, maybe some ibuprofen or something, it's giving you a lot of trouble. You need to probably maybe make an appointment with your family physician. And then once that happens, we get you set up. I go through an evaluation with the knee. I would look at it, kind of do some special testing to see if you've got any cartilage damage, check it with any arthritis, see your weakness. If you balance, put you through some coordination tests, and find out what your problems are. And you would not believe it, most of the time pain is related to weakness. And if we can get that leg strong, and there's not too much arthritis, we can get you back going.
Okay, and I know you mentioned the so-called, I guess it's not the reference from the doctor that is such a big thing anymore with folks, isn't it? I mean, you can't just walk in anymore and get services basically of any kind in the medical field anymore, can you?
Well, that's kind of the way it's set up. And each state is different. With Medicare, though, with Medicare, for me to actually perform treatment, I have to have a order from a licensed practitioner. Now, in the state of Kentucky, it was much easier. You do for Medicare, but for most insurances, someone walked in the door, had the knee problem, you had a private insurance, I would take you right back and take a look at you and perform treatment. So it's a different state, but in this state, it's different. So it's called direct access. But that's kind of the way we play the rules here in Tennessee. And so, but I'm always an advocate of their family practitioner taking a look at those things before we get started.
Right. And I know, I know you mentioned the word ibuprofen, which is I got another one of our miracle drugs. Between an ibuprofen and an aspirin.
From
a non-professional doctor.
That's not my expertise, but of course, aspirin, from what I understand, they say that if it was developed right now, it would be a miracle drug because it does so much for you, aspirin does. It's an anti-inflammatory, it's a blood thinner, relieve joint pain, things like that. Ibuprofen, I think, has a lot of the same characteristics as well, but I would not want everyone to take my, there's more to that. And, there are things you don't want to mix aspirin with, if you're taking some sort of a blood thinner and those sort of things. So that's something, that you would always want to make sure you check with your physician on that things.
You probably didn't expect me to throw that at you.
Well, usually when someone asks me a question about medication, I say, well, that's not my expertise, because there's so many medications that have, interactions with your prescriptions and things like that. So I always refer that to their...
Okay, and another thing, too, that I know lots of folks as they get older do, and that is inflammation of joints and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you mentioned the magic word there, arthritis.
Oh, yeah.
Is there any really, therapy that can help the arthritis or is it, you know, does it need to be treated in a different way?
Well, we can, you know, you mentioned you brought up knee pain. You walked in with a lot of knee pain. Usually after if the doctor sends me prescription and you came in and he's got knee pain, or you know, and so I would take a look at that. And if you've got a lot of snap, crackle, pop, you know, that's what it usually is. If there's lots of arthritis, there are, once it gets to a certain point, there is really nothing therapy can do for you. However, you wouldn't believe the people that I have worked with over the years that, yes, they've got some arthritis. The main preventive treatment and treatment is range of motion. If you came in, we would probably put you on some heat, try to warm things up, the joint, get you on a bicycle, give you some exercises, work with your balance, and that sort of thing. So you catch it early. Get moving, but the thing about it is, don't think of this as we're like a drill sergeant. You come in, you know, we're going to take you from one day to the next. Don't think you're going to come in and we're just going to pain and torture. I've always, they say PT stands for pain and torture. It is, and we'll take you from one day to the next.
Okay, now that's something too. If, you know, I know a lot of people as they get older and that they do suffer from these aches and pains, and it seems like sometimes the little aches and pains kind of discourages them from doing the proper exercises. What would you recommend is for some exercises for folks at home, some things they can do that alleviate some of the things that you may need to take care of as a major problem later?
Well, the main thing that I would do, you can go on the internet and you can look at things that can give you some simple exercises, and the key is I want to kind of discourage that too, because a lot of people will walk in to therapy and say, can you just give me a group of exercises, you know, and I've always never been that sort of person, because every person that walks in is a little different with their pain. You may say low back pain, but this person may have something like a disc problem, or it could be muscle spasms. It could be a joint problem. You know, there's so many things it can be. So I'm not a big fan of just saying, hey, these are just a group of exercises. You need to have someone to take a look at it and get started. And that's one reason why a lot of people say, well, you know what? I've done these exercises. Therapy doesn't work. Well, you've got to be seen by someone and that can see what's going on and try to give you the best exercises. But, you know, staying up, walking, moving, doing some raising the arms up, doing, any type of thing that you can, simple things, moving is the key.
Okay, now I think right there, we just hit on what I was wanting to get towards. Any time that you've got any type of pain that's preventing you from doing something that you have been doing over and over again forever and ever, if that begins to make you want to cease doing this, that's the time to go see that physician, isn't it?
Exactly. Don't sit there and suffer. I mean, you know, with most insurance, we cover all insurance, as far as I know, up at the hospital. So don't suffer with any types of chronic pain, or if if your mother, you're an adult and your mother or grandmother is having difficulty walking, has had falls at home, don't just chance it, with the falls. I mean, you talk with your physician. We've got a good program we can help them with. And then also, like you said, mentioned pain. Give us a try. You know, I'm not one that will keep someone in therapy for weeks and weeks and weeks. After a week or two, after three or four visits, if you have not seen some significant improvement, you know, I'm going to be referring you. I'm going to be changing my program. I'm going to be finding something different, or moving, sending you back to the physician. So I don't want to waste your time.
Okay, and this is like the thing we've always heard, if you don't use it, you lose it, don't you?
Yeah, that's true.
And I know that's where you're coming from, but what else we got up there now? Anything else right now we need to get in here?
Well, I just wanted to say something also about the therapy. We have a short-term rehab there, and so if inside the hospital we provide that. So if you... end up having some sickness there in the hospital, or if you're in a in Cookeville or somewhere else, and they're saying, you know, you're going to need to stay with us a few days, you're just not ready for home, we offer the short-term therapy rehab that you can be transferred to the hospital and stay a couple of weeks if you have to, and we'll provide the therapy here at home, so you don't have to look and go somewhere else and be close to, you know, people you know.
Okay, that's something I want to bring up. Like I said, if you've had some type of joint replacement, knee, whatever, over it at the main hospital in Cookeville,
mm-hmm.
and you get to a certain point, instead of having to go to Cookeville every day, every so many days, that they can now do that here with our setup here in at the Cumberland Region.
Right. You know, that's, you know, if they're afraid to send you home and you're not ready for home, we have, like, you know, where you would stay in as in-house therapy for a week or two. You don't see a whole lot of that anymore. They try to send you home and stuff, but we do have that and we're available. And I guess the biggest thing I wanted to get across today is that, you know, I know it will take time to build our therapy department up there. Word of mouth is usually will either make or break you, you know. And I'm hoping that I just want to just relay to the community that we have the therapy here at home. You will get taken care of. And I just wanted to make sure of that, that people know that.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you here this morning, and I know hopefully we've got out some information for folks, and we want to make them aware of the fact that, and I will try to make an announcement, and hopefully we will get the word out on January the 23rd, open house at the Cumberland River Hospital, Wednesday, 2 to 4. Everyone come up. Are we going to have refreshments that day?
Yes. Brittany, she's with the dining area. She says she's going to have refreshments and snacks and hopefully maybe some diabetic snacks, you know, sugar-free, and so we'll have everything for everyone. So please come up and see us, and or give us a call. I can give you our phone number. It's 931-243-5250. That's our extension to directly to the therapy department. But yeah, we're looking forward to everybody coming up, and I'm looking forward to meeting a lot of the people in this community.
It's great to have you here, and
thanks, Mr. Watson.
It's great for our community. It's great for our hospital, and we do make folks aware that we do have one of the few remaining local hospitals, and things like this, hopefully we'll keep it around for a few more years.
Great. I do, too. I really like it here. It's really been a pleasure being here for the last 4 months.
And thank you for coming down, and right now we'll take a little short break, and hopefully my next guest will be here in a few minutes.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
As we grow older, aging can present emotional and behavioral problems that often go undetected or ignored. But this is not a part of the normal aging process. Senior Care Unit, located at Cumberland River Hospital in Salina, Tennessee, is devoted to helping older adults and their families deal with these changes. The Senior Care Unit provides a comprehensive approach with a highly skilled staff to pave the way for coping with these difficulties. Referrals to senior care can come from anyone at any time. Don't suffer alone. Senior care is there to help your family when you need them most. For more information or to make a referral, please call 1-800-777-8553 or 931-243-5265.
You're going to need me. You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center, a Grace Healthcare facility serving you from the heart, restoring dignity and rekindling hope. Salina Health and Rehabilitation Center specializes in rehab services for those who need therapy in order to return to their home after a surgery or illness, with a full staff of physical, occupational, and speech therapists. They serve patients' needs through multiple levels of care, including skilled, traditional, and respite care.
Call today to speak with their admissions coordinator for more information. 931-243-3139.
Tweety, want some fruit?
You have to use the right tool for the job. A power drill is the wrong tool to slice. Just like an antibiotic is the wrong tool to treat viruses, including colds and flu. Antibiotics are only needed for certain bacterial infections. When they aren't needed, antibiotics won't help you, and the side effects could still hurt you. Ask your healthcare professional when an antibiotic is the right tool and when it's not. Visit cdc.gov/antibiotic-use.
Tri-County Electric offers our member owners several free options to make paying your electric bill a little easier. Bank draft means never having a late charge. Your bank account will be drafted on the actual date your bill is due. Due date selection allows you to choose what the date is, a date convenient for you, because sometimes a day or two makes a difference. Levelized billing is a rolling 12-month average, keeping the larger winter and summer bills from overwhelming your budget. Contact your local Tri-County Electric office for more details. Tri-County Electric, owned and operated by those we serve.
Recycling means to use something again. Newspapers can be used to make new newspapers. Aluminum cans can be used to make new aluminum cans. Glass jars can be used to make new glass jars. Recycling often saves energy and natural resources. It almost always takes less energy to make a product from recycled materials than it does to make it from new materials. Don't forget to add up the savings and be energy wise.
Welcome back, everyone. On our birthdays today, this is going to be an easy one, Matt.
Okay.
We've only had one call in today.
Well, and that should make the draw fairly easy.
Well, and it was a pretty good call in. Willie McLaren.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
99, I believe.
On January the 1st, 99 years old, and I believe he delivered the sermon out in New Hope a couple of, Sunday before, I guess.
He did.
And he's still up and around, still doing a little bit of singing, and he maneuvers around with a walker now, but he's still up and going and still eating his at least two meals a day with green beans that kept him alive all these years. But we'd like to really wish him a happy 99th birthday, and we'll be wishing him one again this time next year. Matt, what do you got for us this morning?
Well,
wait just a minute. We hadn't properly introduced you yet, probably in a long time. Just exactly who am I speaking to?
My name's Matthew Craighead, and I work for the Clay County Soil Conservation District. I serve there as the district technician. And part of my role is I help farmers develop conservation plans, and then we can provide some cost share to help implement those plans.
Well, let me ask you this, since you said those plans. Do you guys with a farmer, do you go out and sit down and actually have a list, write stuff down and check it off and that kind of thing, like I would do maybe if I was teaching a class or something?
Somewhat. We do a field visit with every farmer that we work with. And in that visit, we'll walk across the farm, we'll get a feel of what they're doing, try to figure out what their goals are, and we'll determine what natural resources they have on their farm and some ways that we could help them protect those, as well as possibly make management of their farm easier.
Hey, well, what about the chemical side? Do you do the soil samples and those type things?
We can assist landowners in doing soil samples, of course. Basically, what you do is collect soil and then send it to a lab.
Send it off to a lab.
And then, we can also assist landowners in interpreting the results once they come back and give them a direction for what they need.
And do a prescription for them.
Yes.
Which kind of use, 6-12-12 or whatever?
Yeah, well, that's a conversation for a whole day.
Okay, just getting back what you actually came for. How about that?
All right, well, last month in December, the Soil Conservation District did our annual award banquet. And it was very, very successful. We had a good turnout. We had around 180 people show up. And part of that banquet, we give out a list of conservation awards. And these ranged from Farmer of the Year, Part-Time Farmer of the Year, Educator of the Year, Young Farmer of the Year, Poultry Producer of the Year, as well as recognize some of the land judging teams. We do a poster contest every year, and we recognize those winners there, and we also give out a scholarship.
Okay, and I guess you probably got those broken down, who got what, and
I do. I guess I'll start. We had several guest speakers. Leon Tillman, who is our new NRCS area conservationist. He covers part of the Middle Tennessee area. He was there and gave an update on the NRCS standings. Miss Holly Harper was there. She works with the Farm Service Agency in their loans department, and they've got some funding opportunities out there, especially for beginning farmers, young farmers, or veteran farmers. And she gave an update on how that program worked. And Miss Jessie Campbell, she's with the Tennessee Department of Agriculture. She was there, and she gives some updates from the state. And I guess the biggest thing we learned there is that they have announced the new Commissioner of Agriculture for Tennessee, and that is Mr. Charlie Hatcher. He was serving the role as the state veterinarian, and he also has a dairy farm right outside of Nashville. And it's kindly getting a following. It's called Hatcher's Dairy, and they bottle their own milk on the farm and then sell it to the public. And just a little bit of trivia, they actually did an episode of Good Morning America at that dairy farm.
Very good.
And then, of course, we had our state representative, Kelly Keyes, in there. He gave us an update for how things were going across the state. And I'd like to give a shout-out. Kelly has always been very supportive of our banquet. And this year he provided each one of our award winners with a blue book that he signed and put a note in, as well as a certificate from the state for the recognition of their awards.
We've got to get Kelly back down here. Well, we'll get him again as soon as this legislative session is over. And he always comes in and does a great rundown on what happened down the state legislature every year for us on the radio. Yeah. We usually give him an hour.
And then getting into our award winners for the year, we'll start out with the poster winners. Every year the Soil Conservation District does a poster contest on a different conservation topic with the school system. And from those, we select some different winners in different categories. So kindergarten through first grade, first place was Hunter McLaren. Second through third grade, first place was Haley Strong. And second place was Braxton Cherry. Fourth through sixth grade, first place was Waylon Hayes. In seventh through ninth grade, first place was Madison Hayes. And then we recognize the FFA land judging team, the 4-H land judging team, and the junior 4-H land judging team. And then moving on into our individual awards, the poultry producer of the year this year was Tim and Melanie Anderson of the Pine Hill community. And they have a layer operation with Cobb Van Tress there. The scholarship winner for this year went to Heath Kimes. Young Farmer of the Year went to Curtis Collins. Part-time Farmers of the Year went to Mike and Doc Bailey. Our Educator of the Year went to Miss Angie Spears. The Grassland Farmer of the Year went to Brandon Likens. And the Farmer of the Year went to Robert Craighead.
All right, that list there. I know we talk the different categories there. I know the egg farms that we have here. I know we had the son of one of the owners on the other morning, and he kind of talked a little bit about, you know, the egg business here in Clay. How many egg producers do we have here in the county now? Do you know right offhand?
Off the top of my head, I think there's about five that actually produces the eggs. And the eggs that they produce is not the eggs that we eat in the store.
Right.
They produce the eggs that makes the chickens that we eat as meat.
Brooders.
Brooders.
Is that the word, or is it breeding houses or brooding houses?
That's above my pay grade.
Mine too. I thought maybe we just called it, that we didn't want to call it breeding houses, we just called it brooders.
I think they refer to them as their breeder flock.
How about that for getting you totally offline? And the grassland farmers, what exactly is a grassland farmer? I mean, what category would, I mean, just exactly do you qualify in that category?
Generally what our board looks at is kind of the grassland farmer of the year is given to a farmer that is managing forage as their primary source of feed for their cattle. And that forage is going to consist of both grass that is grazed by the cow as well as hay that's produced.
Okay, what about, do we have any silage farmers in the county now?
I don't know that we have any that grow just silage. There is a few in the county that is growing silage to feed livestock with as part of their operation. And I actually see silage as making a kind of a comeback. They've got a what's called a total mixed ration now, where they combine silage with some grain supplements as well as some dry hay. And they're finding that that is a lot better on the digestive system of the cow than just the traditional grain feed that we fed for years.
Well, you know, I know, I can remember in the past, you know, you'd drive through the county and you'd see the big pits where they'd been drug out to bury the silage in. But in the past few years, you know, you don't notice hardly any of those.
Of course, a lot of the silage that you're remembering, Thomas, went along with the dairy industry
right.
in the county. When we had a prevalent number of dairies in the county, silage just was their primary source of feed to feed the dairy cow. And once the dairy industry kind of left and we started transitioning to beef cattle, it become not economically viable to feed a beef animal silage. So we switched over to the dry hay production.
Well, what do you think happened to our dairy farming here in Clay County? Just the economy, time?
It kind of went the way of the rest of the ag sector. And it went to you had to scale up or scale out. And we just don't have a lot of the land base to support the large scale, like 3,000 cow dairies that you have, like up north or out west. And kind of an interesting side note, our state vet, the Hatcher Dairy, instead of scaling up, they chose to start bottling their own milk and use direct marketing to save their family farm.
You know, direct marketing for farmers is becoming a big thing, isn't it?
It is.
And I know something I know that you have worked on, and I don't know what effect on the back burner now, and that is the farm to home thing. I know we did a survey a few years ago about it. Would you buy this? Would you buy that?
We did. I looked into that, and I think there is a market there for some purchasing of meats off the farm. The state, I've talked to the state, and they've got some fairly easy regulations now in order to get licensed to sell that. So if you wanted to sell, like, hog meat by the package, you can work with them, and just with a simple permit and a freezer and a thermometer, basically, then you can start selling packaged meat.
And it's not hardly that stipulation that the feds require where you got to...
No, and now that permit is good for selling meat from one individual to another.
Right.
If you wanted to sell in a grocery store or to a restaurant, that comes with some other regulations.
Okay, now we're talking, you just said individual to individual. How many individuals are we talking about there if you were selling as a farmer that way?
I mean, as far as selling to the public, I know some of the direct marketers that I've talked to, I mean, they'll go to and set up at like a farmer's market. I mean, they may sell to 300 people. In a day's time at some of the bigger markets like Nashville or Knoxville.
You know, I've noticed if you go to some of the farmers' markets now, you do see the fresh meat. And I was wondering about, you know, the regulations, the stipulations, the things that govern that.
Yeah. Of course, that when you get into selling to the public on like a grocery store level, then you start getting regulated by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And, of course, Clay County being kind of rural like it is, it's not seen the influx of some of these operations like Nashville or Knoxville. You know, you can go to some of these bigger cities and find some butcher shops, like an old-fashioned butcher shop that's selling, you know, from the farm to the table type meat.
You know, I know, of course, well, most of us know here if we want some good fresh home sausage, we know where to go get it, don't we?
Yeah, that's still a market in the county.
There is. Okay, now, the Farmer of the Year, what all goes into selecting Farmer of the Year?
So the Farmer of the Year, we kind of look at that as their big award for the year. You know, so we're looking for an individual that's worked with the district for a long period of time. And Robert has worked with the district for well over 10 years now. He's got his farm cross-fenced. We've worked with him to help build his forage base and improve his cattle herd. He's installed an alternative watering system, and so his cattle drink only out of the ball waters. They don't have access to streams or the river. Some of our past farmers of the year, like Mr. John Kendall, he's worked with the district for many years, too. And so basically we're looking for a farmer that is implementing on the ground the practices that we're recommending, such as excluding cattle from sensitive areas, increasing forage heights and things along those lines.
Okay, and on a sad note, I know, Matt, this year, one of our Century Farms was auctioned off a few weeks ago. And I've had a couple of people ask me, are there parts of that farm that can now remain as Century Farms with members of the family that may own part of that farm? Or
I'm going to reach back into my memory here. I looked at this because actually our farm, my farm, the one that I live on, is actually a Century Farm this year. So I've looked into getting that certification. And the basics of it is the farm, at least 10 acres of the farm, has to have remained in the family as a direct descendant of the family for the past 100 years. And it couldn't have been sold outside the farm. We have another farm right outside town that was briefly sold to another individual and then bought back. So it wouldn't qualify as a Century Farm.
So it has to be a direct, you know, not like a nephew or... Is that a direct? Or
I think so, but now I'm not an expert on this by any means.
And I'm just wondering, because I'm not going to go any farther, but I just want to know if that status can remain with that farm.
Yeah. But the Century Farm program is something I'm a fan of because, you know, the average American is getting further and further removed from the farm. Right now it's 3 generations removed, and we're quickly working on being 4 generations removed from having any kind of farm experience for the average person.
You know, and that's something that just kind of hit me here all at once, too, since we're getting ready to celebrate the sesquicentennial celebration here in Clay County. It might be a duty of you maybe to find if we've got any 150-year farms in the county by the same family since the county was established.
That will be a good research project, and I'd be happy to work on that, or we might look at getting extension. That'd be more of their line of work, I would think.
Well, that just kind of struck me then, since I'm on one of those committees, that would probably be neat to, if we could trace some farms. I know we're doing a thing with ancestry, of tracing ancestors all the way back to the formation of the county. And
it would be neat. And one thing I've looked into and tried to figure out is what land grants was given as part of Clay County in the past, because I think part of my farm come as an original Civil War type land grant, or even a Revolutionary War land grant.
See, I think I got a book the other day that my cousin lined me up on, that like 300-something pages of the Gist family, which I didn't really realize that I was a member of. And I think there was a 450-acre grant given to Benjamin Gist, maybe over at Clemensville, that area there that reached from Clemensville over to where Highway 52 is now.
Yeah, that's something I find interesting and would like to see a little more research done on.
Oh, when I get the book back from Miss Melissa, I'll let you have that, and you can do some tracking down on that. But it does a great job. It's one of the first that I'd ever been associated with. But if your name is mentioned in there, turn over to the index, and you can look up your name and find the page you're on. So it makes it easy to find things. Okay, now, our Farmer of the Year. Then the other was our part-time farmers.
Yeah, part-time Farmer of the Year we give this year to Mike and Doc Bailey. They've got a farm just south of Salina, and they're two brothers that have been farming together now for a while. And we worked with both of them in the past several years to get their cattle excluded from the stream and the river, put an alternative water system in, and some things like that. They're doing a good job managing their farm for grass quality.
Okay, and then I know we had our part-time farmer.
Our young Farmer of the Year this year was Curtis Collins.
Oh, yeah.
And he actually just recently purchased his own farm. Of course, he's been farming for several years with his father, and so he's expanded out into his own operation, and we spent some time out there with him and give him some recommendations, and he's off to a good start, and I wish him well on his farming career.
Well, you know, it seems like, you know, once you've walked barefoot through the plowed ground, it's kind of hard to get that out of your system, isn't it?
It is, but, of course, part of our push as conservationists is to get away from plowing ground and moving, you know, implementing no-till, and now even going further with some soil health practices like multi-species cover crops on some of these crop fields.
Okay, cover crops. It's wintertime. It's time for cover crops, isn't it?
I hope we've got cover crops out this year. If not, there's going to be a lot of your farm's going to be moving downstream.
Yeah. We've had a little wet weather, haven't we?
Just a little.
Okay, now, as far as cover crops, exactly the flora we're looking at there that saves the land from washing away.
So the idea of a cover crop is to avoid fallow or bare ground. So at the end of the cropping season, like say you've had out a crop of soybeans or corn, the idea is to go in and to establish a crop such as annual ryegrass or cereal rye or winter wheat's really popular. And what that's going to do is in the fall, it's going to take off and start growing and get about 6 or 8 inches tall and get a good root mass established. And then it's going to go dormant for the winter. And that root mass and that plant cover is going to hold and stabilize the ground until the next spring, which once you come in and harvest the cover crop, or even now we've got people that's rolling them down and then planting directly into it with the next crop.
As opposed to our perennial hay crops that we have on the land.
Yeah. And those cover crops, not only do they help hold the ground, but if you introduce a legume to it, they'll actually create nitrogen as they grow. So that's basically fertilizer. And they're also finding out that these cover crops are holding nutrients from one crop to the next. So traditionally, if we're through the wintertime due to various chemical factors, you would lose part of your fertilization from one season to the next. These cover crops are actually taking it up and holding it through the winter, and then it's becoming available the next spring for the next crop.
You know, back to the old time of turning the soil in the spring, we always turned the cover crops under, didn't we?
Yeah, and that was tobacco. That's where we really seen the influx of cover crops in the county was with the tobacco program, when it became a requirement to have some covers on that. Then people really got to see the benefits of those.
Now, that was back in the day when we got just a few square inches to grow tobacco on, and you had to get every plant you could as close as you could and get as much as you could out of it.
Well, the only thing that I've seen they do different now is they put them closer and get just a little bit more out of it. So,
Okay, and the tobacco industry, we still have a few acres of tobacco here in the county, don't we?
Yeah, there's still some lingering around. Of course, the buzzwords that I've heard for the past month that my phone keeps ringing about is, do you know anything about growing hemp? And some people are calling it the crop of the future, and then some people are looking at it very skeptically. So,
yeah, I know that it's gotten lots of national publicity, and I do. I think, do we have a farmer here in the county that had a permit to grow it?
We did. I think there was maybe one or two that's had some permits and has grown it. And then I'm hearing a lot of interest about growing it next year.
It may bring back the burlap sack industry if we get enough of that going.
That would be interesting to see.
You know, that's something that I guess that some of the younger folks wouldn't understand. We said something about grass strings, would they?
Yeah. Of course, there's two different types of hemp that they're looking at growing. One is a type of hemp that is grown for the fiber production, so making the sacks. And my understanding on it is going to be real similar to row crops. And they'll actually cut it, dry it, and then bale it like hay. And the other one that got everybody so interested in because of the dollar value attached to it is growing the hemp for the production of CBD oil.
Right, for the oil production.
Yeah.
Which is a totally different process, isn't it?
Yes, it is. My understanding is it is very labor intensive. The figure that I recently heard was that it was going to be 2 to 3 times more labor intensive than the traditional tobacco crop was. So I tell people that, and they kind of start backing up a little bit after that.
You know, that it is kind of scary, isn't it? Because we know that most of our folks that do have the tobacco acreage have, you know, fairly large plots of tobacco, and they bring in, I guess, seasonal labor to help with it and that type of thing. So it's not going to be one of these family operations, is it?
I could see some promise for a young family that was looking to grow, say, maybe an acre of it and do the labor themselves.
Okay.
I think it could be similar to the tobacco of 50 years ago, where the family worked an acre and, you know, made Christmas money and maybe a mortgage payment off of it.
That sounds like a neat idea, then, doesn't it?
It does. In some ways, I see it very promising, but I think there's going to be a lot of risk involved as well, especially on the front end.
Guess what? I just got a bird in my ear that said, we're about done again.
Let me throw one more thing in on the hemp. I seen that there's going to be a hemp production workshop at Heiderberg's in Cookeville in January. If you want more information about that, I'd say you could contact your local extension agent or you could talk to me.
Okay. I think, we went through this pretty quick today.
We have.
Thanks, Matt, and lots of great information today. And we'd like to thank everyone for listening to us this morning. It's been, once again, a pleasure to come to you here on WVFB-FM 101.5 Kicks Country. And I guess it's about time we shut the door and got out of here. And may the good Lord bless and keep you until we meet you again. And hopefully we'll meet you again this next Thursday at 9 o'clock with a rebroadcast at 6 o'clock tonight and streamed on the Dale Hall Horizon site. and I think I've got everything in. And with that, good day, Clay County.
Thanks for being with us today for the Clay County Corner on Kix Country. We thank all of our interesting guests, and we thank all of our fine sponsors. Our sponsors take pride in and care about our community. So when the need arises, make sure you visit them. Or just give them a call and tell them thanks for sponsoring the Clay County Corner. So until next Thursday morning at 9, we hope you have a great week.